attention. I'd do anything to get attention from a man, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Pretty clever. Who likes it? All right, all right, woohoo! Okay. Well, tonight we had somebody I think very special. I love her, and of course, anybody that knows her loves her. But she was so chicken the first time we got her to come up here to talk. I don't think she's too chicken now. And if we just really cheer and shout, she won't be chicken at all. I don't think we are. No, she won't be. Can we cheer and shout for Katie? Among loving family faces and breathing air that's breathable and probably going back home to a home we recognize. I'm real grateful to be here tonight, and I don't take it for granted anymore. I was evacuated 4 years ago in the fire. And, you know, the only nice thing I can say about it is it sure teaches you what's important. It was very clear to me when I left my home 4 years ago that I was just leaving stuff and that wasn't what was important. But I'm also real grateful this time around not to be leaving my home. So my thoughts are certainly with the people who've had to do that. Tonight, we're going to talk about the 23rd Psalm. We read it in here every week. And I don't know about you guys, I remember it going way, way back. And its words are soothing. I think we all could use some soothing tonight. But as usual, I don't have in mind just soothing us. I have in mind stirring up a little controversy. Maybe not. But at least asking us to look in more depth at something we probably take for granted. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, or those of you who just want to follow along, it is letter C in your songbook, right after letter A and B. Actually, it'd probably be helpful to look at it tonight, because we're going to look at it kind of closely. And I thought we might cheat and read through it together once first. We'll do it again later, but this is one of those lovely pieces of poetry that we probably can't repeat too many times.
You're talking about the 23rd Psalm.
The 23rd Psalm.
Would you like to sing it?
No, thanks. Definitely not on microphone. You'll be grateful. I won't sing. Okay, can we say it together, please? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness. For his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest the table before me in the presence of my enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely the goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Amen. Everybody recognize it? Anybody else find comfort in it right now? I think we can relate to a lot of it. And I thought we'd look at it from three perspectives tonight. The first is from a historical perspective. It was written by King David. Anybody know who King David was? My biblical history, that's the first disclaimer of the speech tonight. I'm not an expert, and I am not a biblical scholar, so a lot of what you're going to hear tonight is my opinion. But you know what? That's one of the fun things about talking. I get to give you my opinion. So feel free to differ, and feel free to pull rank if you know something I don't know. I don't know exactly how long ago King David wrote this. We know that he was king of Jerusalem a very long time ago. This is part of the Old Testament in the Bible. New Testament started about 2,000 years ago. Moses is in the Old Testament about 4,000 years ago. So how about we give King David 3,000 years ago? I don't know exactly, but a long, long time ago. We're going to look at it from a historical perspective. Then we're going to look at it briefly from a fundamentalist Christian perspective. Now we're going to look at it from a contemporary perspective, because there's three very, very different perspectives. King David, long before he was a king, was a shepherd. He took care of sheep for a living. Not a lot of us can relate to that, but I think we need to know some of that history in order to understand this psalm. He lived at a time where people knew that milk didn't come from a box in a grocery store, where if you didn't protect your sheep, you didn't eat, or you didn't have wool to spin for clothing. They lived a little closer to earth and survival than we do. And I think some of that shows in this psalm. Let's look at it for the first time from that historical perspective. Being a shepherd, he knew that the job of a shepherd is to protect sheep. Anybody in here had an urge to be protected in the last week? Any of us wish somebody else was in charge and could make it safe and fine? That is such a human desire, the desire to have someone bigger than we are, to make and keep us safe. And I think that's a holy beginning. There's a wonderful thing about being human, and that is that we are born dependent. It's a wonder. And if we have good shepherding through our early years, we grow up. We grow into fully capable people. Some of it gets stuck. And I've talked in talks before about what happens when our belief in God gets stuck at an earlier level. I think this belief that God protects us and provides everything for us might be an example of that earlier belief. It's where we're supposed to start, and I don't think it's where we're supposed to end. Even if in very, very stressful weeks, we go back to wanting it for a while. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. If you're a sheep, you're probably not all that good at finding green pastures and still waters for yourself. You need somebody to do it for you. And again, if you don't want to wander off into the wilderness and be eaten by a wolf or fall off a cliff or get stuck in a thorn bush, that's probably a good idea to have somebody keeping an eye on me. He restores my soul. Okay, something is starting to happen in this psalm that's moving us out of sheephood. Maybe King David, who started out ruling sheep and later ruled people, noticed there was a difference. He restores my soul. I don't know anybody who thinks that sheep have souls. They are notorious for being sort of stupid animals. Think of the words we think of in English. Sheepish. Or a wolf in sheep's clothing. Or counting sheep when we're trying to bore ourselves to sleep at night. Sheep are not soulful animals. And yet if we move into the psalm in some depth, he restores my soul. He leads me in the path of righteousness. Sheep? I think we've moved from sheep into humans. Humans, we assume, have souls, and we assume that they can be taught to do the right thing. For his name's sake, yea. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Okay, now we're definitely not in sheep. For you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Anybody know what a rod and a staff are to a shepherd? I had to look that one up. The staff is the hooked crook that we're familiar with from Christmas plays or bad performances where we wish they'd put somebody off stage with one. A rod is a crook that the shepherd needs to protect sheep from predators. He knocks the predator around with the crook and literally protects the sheep. The rod and the staff, they comfort me? Okay, something about this. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Sheep again? A table? In the presence of enemies? Doesn't matter. You anoint my head with oil? My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I'm going to argue that the sheep metaphor is a good starting place, but it isn't up to the task that the soul of the psalm is. Also, I'm going to argue that a fundamentalist interpretation of this psalm isn't good enough either. Let's go back through it. The Lord is my shepherd. Okay. The Lord protects me and teaches me the path to walk in and takes care of me. I don't have any particular issues with that. I shall not want. Shall can be used lots of ways. Is it telling us that it's wrong to want? Is it telling us that God is such a good provider that we won't need to want? Is it telling us that need will be met and so our wanting will fall away? I don't know. I don't know how to answer that, but I think the right answer on that. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. This is still somebody else who's more powerful than I am and wiser, making me beside him. This book, which is on Psalm 23 by a fundamentalist minister, makes a big deal about that word, he makes me. Says that we're so disobedient and so stupid that we have to be made to do the right thing. I'm sorry, I've outgrown that. That's not how I prefer to be raised as a child. It's not how I prefer to raise my own child. And it's certainly not how I think of God. Out there ready to bash me into line or waiting for me to step out of line so he can be out of him. So I like it when we move on to the next verse. He restores my soul. But I start to have trouble with the next line. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness. Anybody in here like the word righteous? Doesn't have good connotations these days. Think about self-righteous people. Or people who are sure and certain that they have the only right way. We have to be really careful sometimes with what we believe, that we don't use it as a club to beat someone else with or to exclude them. And yet, in a fundamentalist interpretation, this author is sure he has the right way. My problem with fundamentalist interpretation of this poem is that it argues that God will take good care of us if we behave well and obey the law, that we are indeed to be sheep to follow unquestioningly. How would you like to be one of the 500,000 people evacuated and have someone tell you that happened because you did not obey God well enough? Not violating the just sense of justice or fairness or order, because it violates the heck out of us. I understand it. I think it's another of those stages that we develop through, where we believe that we can make God take good care of us if we just do enough of the right thing. So we start out in this psalm as sheep. We move into obedient servants in hopes of being treated well. Let me get to some interesting lines. He leadeth me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. What the heck does that mean? For his name's sake. This author suggests that God has an ego, didn't say it in that word, but that God has to come through because we won't like him otherwise. He has a reputation to maintain. In that case, I'd say God is in a whole lot of trouble this week because he's not coming through the way we prefer it. What else can it mean? Well, the ancients didn't pronounce the name of God. They thought that unholy. I think there's another reason for not trying to pronounce the name of God, and that is that we don't comprehend God very well. Names tend to try to contain essence. And God, in my understanding, is so far beyond our understanding that we can talk about him one face, one fact, one side at a time, but we can't get a very complete picture of God. Interestingly, I think the author is also defeated by the fact. He gives us about 12 names for God, and I think we'll need some of them to you. He says, the Lord is my shepherd, Jehovah Yireh, meaning my protector. I shall not want. Jehovah Jireh, my provider. He maketh me lie down in green pastures. Jehovah Adonai, my master. He leadeth me beside the still waters. Jehovah Shalom, my feet. He restoreth my soul. Jehovah Rohi, my healer. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Jehovah Tzidkenu, my righteousness. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, Jehovah Shema, my divine presence. I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Jehovah Sabaoth, my warrior. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Jehovah Elyon, my defender. Thou preparest the table before me in presence of my enemies. Jehovah Nisi, my encourager. Thou anointest my head with oil. Jehovah, Mekadesh, my righteousness. My cup running over, Jehovah El Shaddai, my nourisher. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. Jehovah El Elohim, my protector. And I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Jehovah El Olam, my eternity. I like all those names. I don't think about God in lovely, stately, poetic names very often. But that's as close as I can get to an understanding of four of my namesake. But maybe we need to meditate on the many faces of God in order to understand what the name of God means. Okay, if you look at your psalm, I think something profound changes in the very next line. Yea, have I walked through the valley of the shadow of death. For anybody in here who is not a native English speaker, this is not the yay that means I'm excited. This is a much, much older yay, and it's meant to draw our attention to the line. Yay, oh yay, hear me. Even though I have to walk through the valley of the shadow of death. I would say we have an awful lot of people walking through the valley of the shadow of death, this week, of loss, of pain. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil. For thou art with me. Do you notice the change of voice from the earlier part of the psalm? He makes me. He leads me. For his namesake. When we get to this part of the psalm, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. We've moved from talking about God into talking to God and into relationship with him. And most of us have come into changed relationship with him precisely because of some kind of fear or pain or loss. And I think the valley of the shadow of death is very likely to be the place that we encounter God. I will fear no evil. What does evil mean? It's kind of an old-fashioned word. We don't talk about it a lot. Bad? Wrong? Negativity? Does it have to be intentional? How come it says I will fear no loss? It doesn't say that. How come it doesn't say I won't fear death? I walk through the valley of the shadow of death and I will fear no evil. For thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Most of these psalms were written either as poems of thanksgiving or poems of petition, asking for change or protection. This one feels more like a meditation. And I think in this middle part of the poem, we've changed from being sheep into being human, and into being human still having to deal with circumstances we don't want to deal with. Death, evil, enemy. We may not relate really easily to a lot of those words, but we can all relate this week to unwanted conditions. And I want you to notice what the promise is in this part. I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. We don't get a promise that it's going to fix it, that it's going to make it all better, that we won't have to face it. We get a promise of presence and company. That is not the God I came to church seeking. I've talked about Santa Claus God before, the one who answers all my prayers, preferably the way I want them to be answered, the one who can be petitioned into making the world work the way I want it to work. Maybe one of the tasks of being alive is to come to terms with the God that is, and maybe human beings have been trying to do that for a really long time. If we jump to the last part of the psalm, thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. In David's time, the way you became king was to have your head anointed with oil. That was the marking of a king or a priest. Scholars think he wrote this poem when he had lost his kingship already. His son was plotting against him, trying to take the throne. He's remembering a time where God has anointed his head with oil. That can be a symbol of a covenant, of a promise made. How about my cup running over? How many of us love that thought? Between being led by still waters and green pastures and having our cup running over. Remember, he wrote this in a desert. We live in a desert. We've noticed. We'd love to have our cup and our reservoirs and our rivers run over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me. I read this carefully, and it's interesting. The beginning part of the poem is about what makes us behave, or what leads us. The end of the poem is about what follows us. Goodness and mercy. All the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. This is where history is interesting. When David was alive, many people were still nomadic. They moved their house, their tent, actually from place to place. In fact, what he really wanted to do was to build a permanent home for the Ark of the Covenant, like the box that contained the tablets that the Ten Commandments were written on. That was the most sacred spot for his people. And he wanted a permanent spot, but it wasn't given to him to build that and have that permanent. But his last line is, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I will come to a place that's permanent, that I can count on, where I can stop rambling, where I can stop roaming, where I can stop avoiding people trying to snatch my throne and come to peace. That's a pretty universal human desire. A lot of us in traditional Christianity have seen that as something called heaven, where if we're good enough during this lifetime, we'll arrive. We'll get to be with God. We'll get to be rewarded in peace, in green pastures, near still water, at rest. Don't you imagine if you were a firefighter this week, that would sound pretty good. You've been without water, you've been without sleep, you've been without rest, and you'd like to come to stillness. I think the most unexpected thing that emerged from looking at this psalm for me wasn't all the comforting images. Those are there and they're pretty readily visible. Phases, still waters, green pastures. What surprised me was the help in envisioning a God. The same question I've asked for the last talk. Well, what is God? If God isn't the God who rewards good behavior and punishes bad behavior, what is God? I believe that our readiness to be in relationship with God goes through stages. That we start with an image of God as a shepherd providing and protecting for us, and that's all we can comprehend. It's a lovely start. And if we don't get it, we don't get any further either. Later, we're ready for a God of rulers, of righteousness. Later still, we're ready for a God who's willing to accompany us through the shadow of death. We are, as far as I know, the only creatures who know we will die. We must die. And that scares us. Most of us handle that by putting it off. Not my time yet. I'm not old enough. I'm sick enough. But as we live longer, somebody we love is old enough or sick enough or unlucky enough, and they die. And that reminds us that we're not immune. The shadow of death can be the foreshadowing, the knowing before it happens. Most of us find life pretty hard, and yet we still don't want to give it up. It's bloody hard this week, and yet if you ask us, most of us are just plain old grateful to be here. Letting go of a God who can defeat death might be hard to do. We in the church are aware that death is of the body, that there's some essential part of us that continues on afterwards. We have regular proof of that. Do you think that makes us less afraid of dying? I don't know. It's very reassuring to me that people I love still exist. Very reassuring to imagine that I will exist as well. But if you ask me, if that makes me feel safe anticipating going through something like cancer, or fire, or aging, I don't think it helps all that much. But that line, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me, might be as close to help as I can get, and it matches my experience of being human on the planet now. When I'm afraid, you know what helps? Company. Company that understands and can reach me and can share the experience. See, if I can't get away from the experience, that's what I really want. But if I can't have that, then someone who will be with me through it. Help. And the picture of a God who may not be able to stop pain and suffering, but will be with me through it. Get a picture. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemy. Anybody here really comfortable with the idea of having enemies? David was a warrior. He fought other tribes and he was having to fight the sun. So enemies to him had one meaning. How about for most of us? Are there enemies like temptation, despair, exhaustion, confusion? Thou preparest the table before me in the presence of my enemies. Fundamentalist authors say he does that to make the enemy jealous, to show them that he's victorious. How about, no matter how bad things get, I'm not leaving you alone. In the presence of your enemy, your struggle, your impossibility, your daily work here, no matter what. Thou anointest my head with oil. Is this psalm just for David? Is it for all of us? I think it's become a classic, loved psalm because we can all relate to it. Does that mean we're king? If you ask the fundamentalist, yes, we're anointed. Or Christ is the anointed one. I don't have an opinion. I am arguing that we have some kind of beloved relationship with God. That we are anointed in the sense of belonging at a very deep level. My cup runneth over. I am given so much that there's more than I need. And maybe one of these is about to share it then with other people. Surely, goodness and mercy shall follow me. I don't know about your life, but this line rings really true in my life. I cannot invoke goodness. I cannot make myself behave. Mercy? I can't make that happen either. But you know, they follow me around in my life, no matter what. They follow me. They're not mine to give, but they seem to be part of being alive. Surely, they follow me all the days of my life as a free gift in relationship from love. And I too shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. not because I behave well, not because I'm part of the club that only some people get to belong to, but because I'm in relationship with something that lasts past dying, past suffering, past struggle. I think we all come here in search of that something new. I think if we're brave, we keep asking questions about it and making ourselves available to it. I think that's one of the gifts we give each other here, is the permission to ask those questions and to keep growing. So it helps me. One of the very sophisticated psychologists I read sometimes talks about whether we're aware of it or not. We have a mistaken belief that comes from having been very little people once upon a time. And that is that we're all separate. Obviously we're in separate bodies. But most of us feel very alone. I think this song might be in the only language that was available, say, 3,000 years ago, trying to talk about that sense of separateness and the fact that we can start out that way, but that we don't have to end up that way. But dwelling somewhere forever in relationship is our birthright. It is who we are when we're healthy and whole and loved. And I invite you to look at the psalm through the Bible. Thanks for letting me share.